In the Eastern Caribbean Sea lies an island both ancient and surprisingly alive, Dominica, the nature island of the West Indies. Here, the volcanic soil exhales steam through rainforest canopies, and stories pass through generations like heirlooms. Step into a mountain village, and you'll smell simmering callaloo on the breeze. Walk a cobbled street in Roseau, and hear the echo of Creole, English, and Kalinago in a single conversation. Dominica does not shout its wonders. It whispers them. This is not a travel guide. It is a journey into the spirit of a place where heritage, flavor, and wilderness still walk hand in hand. In these chapters, we'll explore Dominica's layered history, sit at its kitchens, listen to its ancestral songs, and walk its highland paths. Each page, a passport, not just to a destination, but to understanding. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1, The Roots Beneath the Green. From the moment your foot touches Dominica's black sand shores, the air feels different. It is dense, sweetened with moisture and leaf, but deeper still is something else, the scent of memory. Dominica is one of the few Caribbean islands that remained largely untouched by the sugar plantation economy that reshaped so much of the region. It is a land where the rainforest stood guard, where the rivers remained wild, and where identity remained rooted, not replanted. The island's earliest inhabitants, the Kalinago, once called Caribs by outsiders, have lived on these hillsides for over 1,000 years. Today, the Kalinago territory, a 3,700-acre expanse carved into the island's east coast, stands as the only legally recognized indigenous reserve in the Caribbean. That is not a historical footnote. It is a living culture. Within these lands, basket weaving is not a craft. It is a language of memory. Canoe making is not tradition. It is continuity. Every carved gommier tree, every reed mat, every Chante Ma song is a syllable in a story that refuses to end. But the Kalinago were not alone in shaping Dominica. The 17th and 18th centuries brought colonial conflict that swirled, discouraged. In the post-colonial years, schools promoted proper English, framing Creole as broken or backward. But Creole refused to disappear. It survived in lullabies, in jokes, in the coded language of resistance. Today, it thrives, not in textbooks, but in memory. In a rural village like Grand Fond or Castle Bruce, you might pass two elders seated beneath a breadfruit tree, speaking Creole as effortlessly as breathing. Their speech is punctuated with proverbs, poetic fragments that compress centuries of wisdom into a single line. Se pli taka pli, they might say. The later it gets, the more it happens. A reminder that time reveals all things. Language in Dominica is not just spoken, it is performed. Take Chante Mas, the traditional masquerade songs of carnival. These are not simply festive tunes. They are social commentary set to rhythm, improvised verses that can praise, mock, or protest. They are sung with drums, bells, and the urgency of memory. A Chante Mas performer is not just an entertainer. They are a historian, a trickster, a community mirror. And then there is ballet, the call and response music of dance and drumming. The songs are simple in form, but layered in meaning. A lead singer calls out, often in Creole, and a chorus answers. The lyrics might recount a harvest, a love affair, or a political injustice. The rhythm is insistent. You can feel it in your chest. Even among the younger generation, language is evolving, not disappearing. In Roseau, you might hear teenagers switching fluidly between English, Creole, and a more globalized Caribbean patois shaped by reggae, hip-hop, and digital media. This code switching isn't confusion. It's fluency in identity. Dominicans are multilingual in the way that culture itself is multilingual. Layered, adaptive, resistant to reduction. The Kalinago people, too, are working to preserve their ancestral tongue. Kalinago Barana Aute. Though few fluent speakers remain, the community is actively reviving fragments of vocabulary through workshops, storytelling sessions, and cultural immersion programs. Young Kalinago children are taught not just words, but worldview, how their ancestors named rivers, how they counted moons, how they greeted the sun. In Dominica, language is rarely just transactional. It is ceremonial. When someone says, come and eat, they aren't just offering food. They're offering inclusion. When an elder tells a story before dusk, they aren't just filling time. They're threading continuity. And nowhere is this more evident than in oral storytelling. Long before printed books, Dominican history was carried in the mouth. Folk tales about sucuyons, skin-shedding witches, lugaroos, shapeshifters, and La Diablesse, a seductive ghost woman with one cloven foot, are still told, especially in the hills, especially at night. These stories aren't merely superstition, they are allegories, a lesson about pride or greed or wandering too far after dark. To sit at the edge of a fire and hear an elder begin a tale with once upon a time in the time of the old people is to step into a world where time folds, where history is not past but present. Dominica's linguistic heritage is not static. It is evolving, but intentionally so. There is a growing movement to document and digitize the island's languages. Radio programs broadcast in Creole. School curriculums now include lessons in local idioms and proverbs. Cultural groups offer Creole literacy courses, not just for heritage learners, but for those who've lost touch and want to return. Even in the diaspora, Dominicans are reclaiming their voice. In cities like New York, London, and Toronto, you'll find second-generation children learning Creole phrases over WhatsApp calls with grandparents. The medium may change, but the message, you are part of this, stays the same. Language in Dominica is a thread that ties together food, ritual, family, and land. It is not ornamental, it is essential. In the next chapter, we journey to the edge of the sea, where life flows not through syntax, but salt, into fishing villages, coral reefs, and coastal rhythms that shape the island's heartbeat. Chapter 6, Where the Sea Meets the Soul. To understand Dominica, you must eventually arrive at the sea. It waits at the edge of every village, whispering just beyond the banana trees. It's not the turquoise postcard calm of nearby tourist-heavy islands. Dominica's coastline is rugged, bold, elemental. Black sand beaches melt into cliffs, and waves crash against boulders with a kind of ancient rhythm, less lullaby, more reminder. The sea here doesn't just lap at the shore. It speaks. Dominica is a place shaped as much by water as by earth. While the mountains define its interior, it is the ocean that defines its edge and, in many ways, its identity. Generations have looked to the Caribbean Sea not just as a boundary, but as a provider, a teacher, and a mirror. In fishing villages like Soufriere, Scott's Head, and Marigot, the sea is still central to daily life. At dawn, small wooden boats, known as pirogues, slide quietly into the surf. Men, sometimes fathers and sons, stand barefoot on their bows, throwing out hand lines, listening to the sea's mood. They don't always speak. Out there, you read the clouds, the color of the water, the flight of birds. It's a language without words. Fish like tuna, mahi-mahi, and snapper are caught, gutted, and cleaned while the sun climbs higher. By midday, the catch is packed into coolers, transported inland, or sold directly at roadside stalls. A woman fans flies away from her table as she shouts prices in Creole. A child helps scale a fish with a sharpened spoon. These are not acts of novelty. They are part of a living rhythm. But the sea is not just an economic lifeline. It is spiritual. Among older Dominicans, you'll still hear stories about the calling of the sea, how certain people are born with a connection to it. Some say the sea accepts their prayers. Others say it calls names at night. Fishermen wear small charms on twine around their necks, blessed by village elders or rooted in ancestral traditions, a piece of coral, a folded leaf, a silver coin. Scott's Head, the southernmost tip of the island, is where the Caribbean Sea meets the Atlantic Ocean, a geological and symbolic crossroads. From the headland, you can stand with the two great bodies of water on either side of you. To one side, the calm. To the other, the restless surge. It's a metaphor, perhaps, for the duality that shapes so much of Dominica. Tranquility and tension, rootedness and movement. The island's coastal communities have long known how to read the sea's many faces. Before weather apps and satellite forecasts, signs were found in the wind's direction or the foam on the waves. A change in fish behavior might signal an approaching storm. A red sky at morning, a warning passed down in proverb. In recent years, Dominica's relationship with the sea has expanded into new realms. The waters off Champagne Reef near Soufriere bubble with natural volcanic gas vents, creating an underwater landscape like no other. A kind of warm, mineral-rich effervescence that draws divers and snorkelers from around the world. But beyond the attraction lies a deeper reality. Dominica is emerging as a quiet leader in sustainable marine tourism. Unlike larger islands with cruise terminals and mega resorts, Dominica's approach has been small scale and community led. Local dive shops often double as conservation hubs. Fishermen work with researchers to monitor reef health. Community tourism initiatives allow visitors to participate in traditional fish pot making, boat carving, or coral gardening, not as staged performances, but as shared experience. The Cabritz Marine Reserve near Portsmouth protects vital mangrove and seagrass ecosystems. These areas are not just homes for marine life. They act as natural buffers against storms, carbon sinks, and fish nurseries. Local students now visit them as part of school programs. Young Dominicans are learning that the sea is not something to exploit, but to understand. Yet, even with these efforts, challenges remain. Rising sea levels, plastic pollution, and overfishing all press upon the coastline. Hurricanes, intensified by climate change, are more frequent and more ferocious. The memory of Hurricane Maria, which battered the island in 2017, is still fresh. Boats were lost, homes flooded, reefs damaged. But Dominica rebuilds, not just with concrete, but with knowledge. In communities like San Sauveur and Fond St. Jean, women's groups lead mangrove planting efforts. Fishermen attend workshops on sustainable catch practices. Youth programs teach ocean literacy. The work is slow, generational, and profound. And always there is the sea. It remains a place of pilgrimage. Children learn to swim in the same coves their grandparents once fished. Couples sit quietly on jetties at sunset, listening. The sea's music is never still. It murmurs of history, migration, trade, trauma, and homecoming. Some say the ocean forgets nothing, but in Dominica, perhaps it is the people who never let it. In our final chapter, we return full circle, looking at how Dominica continues to evolve, balancing heritage and modernity, local life and global pressures, nature and nationhood, a reflection on what it means to belong to a place, a culture, a story. Chapter 7, Living Island, Living Culture. Dominica is not a museum. It is not frozen in time or preserved behind glass. It is a living, breathing island, and its culture is not heritage on display, but heritage in motion. You see it in the way elders teach children to plait straw hats from pandanus leaves without patterns. You hear it in the syncopated beat of bouillon music booming from roadside speakers. You taste it in the subtle differences between a grandmother's calla lu and her granddaughter's. Same ingredients, new hand, continuity and evolution. That is Dominica's rhythm. This island resists simple definitions. It is neither untouched nor overrun. It has faced hardship, colonization, hurricanes, economic strain, yet it has cultivated a national identity that feels both rooted and fluid. Dominica does not define itself through monuments or slogans. It defines itself through practice, how people plant, how they sing, how they remember. In recent years, the notion of resilience has become a rallying cry. After the devastation of Hurricane Maria, when winds tore off roofs and rivers claimed roads, the world briefly looked toward Dominica, not just in sympathy, but in awe. What emerged was not just recovery, but reinvention. The government committed to becoming the first climate-resilient nation in the world. But even before policy, resilience was already written into the culture. A woman rebuilding her kitchen with salvaged wood and river stones, a teacher holding class under a tarpaulin, a fisherman returning to sea with borrowed nets. Resilience here is not a slogan. It's daily life. Yet Dominica's future is not built solely on surviving storms. It is also built on the quiet power of preservation and the courage to adapt. Young Dominicans are returning home after years abroad, bringing with them new ideas but deep respect. In Roseau, you'll find small businesses that blend innovation with tradition, cafes that serve cassava flatbread with turmeric hummus, studios where ballet meets breakdancing, galleries featuring Kalinago-inspired digital art. In the Kalinago territory, cultural renewal is both urgent and tender. Language classes revive lost words. Young women take up basket weaving alongside their mothers. Storytellers gather school children to speak of ancestral journeys, not to romanticize the past, but to root the future. And then there are the artists, writers, musicians, dancers, many of whom are shaping new conversations around what it means to be Dominican today. Their work stretches from calypso tents to university halls, from beach concerts to WhatsApp group chats. Their voices carry. They ask, how do we honor our past while not becoming trapped in it? It's a question many islands face. But Dominica, perhaps because of its scale and spirit, answers with clarity. We grow around our roots, not away from them. The land helps. Nature is never far here. Even in the capital, mountains loom in the periphery. Rivers run behind grocery stores. Trees reclaim space, faster than concrete can fill it. The land insists on presence. It demands attention. So too does the culture. There is pride in being from Dominica, but not the kind worn on sleeves. It's a quieter pride, found in a perfectly seasoned fish stew, in the care with which someone sweeps their doorstep, in the softness with which a child says, "Bonjour, grand-mère," and visitors, those who take time, who listen more than they speak, are often changed by what they find, not just by the beauty, but by the philosophy. Life here moves differently. It values connection over convenience, season over speed, story over spectacle. That's not to say Dominica is immune to modern pressures. Young people leave in search of work. Imported goods threaten local crafts. Tourism, while still small scale, brings its own tensions. But the conversation is happening. And crucially, it is being led by Dominicans themselves. To explore Dominica is not to escape the world, but to engage with it more deliberately, more deeply. You come here expecting waterfalls and rainforest trails, and you'll find them. But you stay in memory, if not in body, because of the people. Because of the woman who invites you to taste her cassava bread without asking your name. Because of the drummer whose hands tell stories older than the hills. Because of the island's voice, not loud, not boastful, but clear and strong and grounded. Dominica is not a finished story. It is a living chapter, still being written in Creole and carved in Gomier wood, still sung in Lapo Cabo drums and stirred in bouillon pots, still growing, upward, outward, and always inward. And perhaps that is the greatest adventure of all. Like storm clouds, France laid claim, Britain countered. The island changed hands nearly a dozen times before Britain took firm hold in 1763. Yet despite this tug of war, Dominica refused to be remade. Rather than becoming a monoculture colony, it became a mosaic. The enslaved Africans brought to its shores came from diverse ethnic roots, Akan, Yoruba, Igbo, and found themselves not only resisting the yoke of slavery, but merging with local ways. Runaway Maroons often fled into the island's interior, protected by mountains too steep for colonial ambition. Creole culture emerged from this crucible, a blend of French, African, Kalinago, and British influences. Language became a tool of both resistance and reinvention. Today, Creole, Creole, is spoken alongside English, and names like bouillon, belé, and jouet reflect musical forms that carry ancestral echoes. Religion, too, became a space of synthesis. Catholicism dominates the island, yet within the walls of its stone churches are traces of African cosmology and Kalinago ritual. Water remains sacred. So do crossroads. So do names. Dominica's cultural story isn't told in monuments or museums, though there are few. It is told in the rhythm of a drum, in the shared pot of yam and dashin, in the way a child learns to tie a head wrap from her grandmother. It's in the early morning call of the mountain whistler bird, not yet endangered, just elusive, like the island's soul itself. And then there's the landscape. If culture is rooted in place, then Dominica's culture is a rainforest one. Nearly two-thirds of the island remains covered in primary vegetation. There are over 365 rivers, bubbling and twisting down to the sea. There's Boiling Lake, a fumarole that spits mist and mystery. There are sulfur springs, waterfalls, cloud forests, not metaphor, but actual mist-blanketed canopies at Morne-Trepidon's National Park. You don't just observe Dominica, you participate in it. And in doing so, you begin to understand how nature and culture here are not separate forces. they are entwined. Next, we'll step into Dominica's kitchens, where the stories shift from smoke to spice, and where every bite tells of survival, celebration, and soul. Chapter 2, A Taste of Home. On the island of Dominica, food is not merely sustenance. It is an archive. Recipes are less about ingredients and more about memory. The hands that stir a pot of callaloo or press dough for bakes are doing more than preparing a meal. They are repeating gestures performed across generations, often without written instruction, but always with deep intent. To eat here is to listen to a story being told in fire and spice. The heart of Dominica's cuisine is Creole, not in the diluted mass-market sense often seen abroad, but in its truest form, a blend of Kalinago, African, French, and British culinary legacies adapted to volcanic soil and a river-fed pantry. Meals begin early. In rural villages, you might hear the clang of a cast-iron pot as steam rises from green bananas being boiled beside salted cod. Ground provisions, a phrase uniquely Caribbean, refer to root vegetables like yam, dasheen, tania, sweet potato, and cassava. Starchy and firm, they speak to the island's agrarian soul. They grow in rocky, volcanic earth. They require labor, but they fill the belly and last through lean times. Dominicans will tell you that bouillon is the national dish, but bouillon means more than one thing. There is bouillon soup, a dense, spicy blend of meat, pigtail or chicken, dumplings, and ground provisions. And then there is bouillon music, a rhythm born from cadence and carnival that will emerge in a later chapter. In both cases, bouillon is the result of mixing things that might not seem to belong until they do. Saltfish, once a colonial export brought in from the North Atlantic, has become a staple in the Dominican kitchen, flaked and sautéed with onions, garlic, hot pepper, and tomato. It is served with boiled fig, green banana, avocado when in season, and sometimes a boiled egg. It's a meal of contrast, soft and firm, salty and sweet, memory and innovation. And then there is callaloo. Made from the tender young leaves of the dashing plant, callaloo is more than just a soup or side. It's a botanical hymn to the land. Cooked with coconut milk, onions, garlic, and often smoked meats or crab, it becomes silky, green, and rich. One bowl is never enough, not just because of its taste, but because of its comfort. Dominica's culinary influences expand further in its drinks and desserts. Cocoa tea, a morning staple, is nothing like the packaged hot chocolate familiar in the West. Here, raw cacao beans are dried, ground, and rolled into sticks that are then grated and simmered with cinnamon, nutmeg, bay leaf, and condensed milk. The result is a dark, fragrant, almost sacred drink, simultaneously bitter and sweet, like so much of history. For celebrations, there's sorrel juice, a ruby-red hibiscus-based beverage steeped with cloves and ginger, served chilled. During Creole Week or Independence season, vendors sell them in reused glass bottles from roadside coolers. It tastes like the holidays, tart, floral, and fiery with clove. And no account of Dominica's kitchen would be complete without mentioning the local beer, Cubuli. Named after the Kalinago word for the island, Waitukubuli, meaning tall is her body. This crisp lager is brewed with the island's natural spring water. At the end of a hot day, whether spent in a cassava garden or at the sea, there's a quiet ritual in cracking one open and watching the sun dip into the channel. But perhaps most revealing is where these meals happen. In Dominica, the table is not always a table. meals are eaten on porches, in bush kitchens with corrugated tin roofs, or under breadfruit trees. Food is wrapped in fig leaves or served in enamel bowls passed down through families. A plate of food might arrive with little fanfare, but offer a rich welcome. Come and eat. That phrase, often delivered casually, is a doorway. It means you're invited in, not just to the meal, but to the fabric of the home. And that fabric is stitched with resourcefulness. Dominicans waste little. Breadfruit that drops is picked up. Coconut husks become fire starters. Fish bones become broth. There is pride in stretching a meal without thinning its spirit. Today, Dominica's younger chefs are reimagining old recipes. In Roseau in Portsmouth, you'll find creative takes on cassava flatbread with callaloo pesto or lionfish ceviche served on breadfruit chips. Dishes that would make a Kalinago ancestor smile with recognition, even as they raised an eyebrow at the technique. Cuisine here is neither frozen in time nor erased by modernity. It is fluid, like the island's rivers, winding through history, flavor, and identity. So, as the pot simmers and the coconut milk thickens, what is being cooked is more than dinner. It is resilience. It is joy. It is an edible archive. In the next chapter, we'll follow those same roots, this time through rhythm, dance, and language, as we enter Dominica's living festivals and the vibrant cultural expressions that define its calendar. Chapter 3, Festivals of Fire and Memory. On many Caribbean islands, carnival season is synonymous with bright costumes, steel pans, and swaying hips in glitter. But in Dominica, festivals take on a different tone, one that draws more from the soil than the stage, more from memory than performance. This is an island that doesn't celebrate for spectacle. It celebrates to remember, to preserve, and to breathe life into cultural roots that might otherwise be lost. Walk through the streets of Roseau in late October, and you'll hear the unmistakable rhythm of Lapo Kabwit, traditional drums made of goatskin, carried on the shoulders of masked men. The sound is primal, pulsing. It doesn't announce a party. It calls something deeper, ancestral presence. This is Creole festival season, a time when Dominicans, both at home and abroad, return to celebrate not only music, but identity. It's more than a festival. It's a cultural reunion. Women don bright madras skirts and plaid head wraps tied with the elegance of ritual. Men don white shirts and wide-legged pants, mimicking the 18th century plantation style once imposed on their forebears, but now reclaimed with dignity and joy. At the heart of these celebrations is Junen Kweyol, Creole Day. In village after village, language becomes the terroir. Schools put on plays in Creole. Churches deliver sermons in it. From Portsmouth to La Plaine, Dominicans show their pride not just in song and dress, but in reclaiming a language once dismissed as broken or backward. There's a subtle defiance here. For decades, Creole was discouraged in schools, seen as a mark of underdevelopment. Today, it is a badge of cultural endurance. On Creole Day, even the youngest child might speak in proverbs or recite poetry passed down by grandmothers. But if Creole Day is the flame, Independence Day is the bonfire. Each November 3rd, Dominica commemorates its 1978 independence from Britain. The day is marked not by military, parades, or overt nationalism, but by cultural affirmation. Schoolchildren march in perfect rows, not in uniforms of camouflage, but in fabric that tells stories, madras, lace, and cotton in patterns that reflect Dominica's mixed heritage. In these parades, you may notice children carrying traditional farming tools, hoes, baskets, wooden mortar, and pestle, symbols of self-reliance. A young boy might hoist a fishing trap while a girl balances a calabash bowl on her head. This is not nostalgia. It is education, a live curriculum of resilience. Yet the most anticipated celebration for many is World Creole Music Festival, a three-night convergence of voices that echo across the Atlantic. Held just before Independence Day, this festival is not confined to Dominica's borders. It invites the world in. Zouk artists from Guadeloupe, compa bands from Haiti, soca singers from St. Lucia, and sometimes Afrobeat stars from West Africa. The lineup becomes a living archive of Creole culture as it has traveled, morphed, and thrived across continents. At Windsor Park Stadium, the atmosphere is electric. The air smells of grilled meats, clove-infused drinks, and rain. Always a threat, yet never a deterrent. As the drums rise, you see heads bobbing in time, arms raised to the sky. Strangers dance like cousins reunited. Music becomes a mother tongue, understood by all. But Dominica's festivals aren't only about public gatherings. Some of the most meaningful rituals happen in homes and backyards. In smaller villages like Grand Bay or Atkinson, you might be invited to a belay session, an intimate circle of drummers and dancers. The dance is old, its origins tied to both West Africa and French quadrilles. Barefoot women in full skirts twirl in calculated steps around a single drummer. The drum is called a tambo belay, and the dancer's job is to seduce it, not sexually, but spiritually, to make it speak. In that moment, dance is not entertainment. It is dialogue. Dominica also observes All Saints Day and All Souls Day, Christian holidays that here take on unique Caribbean hues. Cemeteries become illuminated gardens. Families visit grave sites, not with grief, but with music, food, and laughter. Tombs are cleaned, candles are lit, and children learn the names of those who came before. This, too, is festival. One, not of spectacle, but remembrance. And it's not all history. Newer expressions are emerging from younger generations. Poetry slams in Creole and English, reggae nights in hidden hillside venues, and fusion dance troupes blending ballet with modern choreography. Dominica's cultural soul is not static. It is alive, adaptive, and curious. What ties all of these celebrations together is intention. Festivals in Dominica are not passive affairs. You do not merely attend them. You participate. You sing. You eat. You remember. Whether you're stirring coconut oil in an iron pot or tying a head wrap in the mirror before Junen Kweyol, you are joining something that stretches far beyond the present moment. To witness Dominica's festivals is to see culture not as a museum piece, but as something living, beating with the same pulse as the Lapo Cabuit, breathing with the smoke of a Bailey fire, and shimmering in the laughter of a child dancing in Madras cloth. In the next chapter, we step away from town centers and into Dominica's wild interior, a landscape of volcanoes, waterfalls, and sacred trees, where nature is not just scenery, but story. Chapter 4, The Island That Breathes Steam. If Dominica's soul resides in its people and traditions, then its bones are volcanic. This is an island formed by fire and sculpted by water. It doesn't merely sit on the earth's crust. It rises, exhales, simmers. To journey into Dominica's interior is to step into a land that is still becoming. The Kalinago called the island Waitakubuli. Tall is her body, and tall she is. From the coastal lowlands, Dominica climbs quickly and unapologetically, offering little flat land, but much in elevation, mystery, and mineral-rich soil. One does not drive through the center of Dominica. One climbs it, turns with it, slows down with it. The roads, narrow and often mist-draped, trace the contours of old lava flows. Ferns, taller than a man, edge the paths. Wild ginger lines, the banks of rivers. There is no such thing here as silence. The forest hums, gurgles, and rustles, nature in conversation with itself. At the center of the island lies Morne-Trois-Piton National Park, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and rightly so. Within its boundaries are sites that feel otherworldly, even as they are deeply earthly. There's Boiling Lake, the second largest of its kind in the world, a water-filled fumarole that bubbles, hisses, and sends up ghostly columns of vapor. It's not easily reached. The hike takes 7 hours, round trip, and crosses terrain that feels increasingly primeval the deeper you go. You pass through the Valley of Desolation, an aptly named landscape of sulfur vents, scorched earth, and pastel-colored mineral streams. The ground is hot to the touch. Pools hiss and gurgle. And yet, even here, life refuses to yield. Moss clings to steam-washed rocks. Ferns grow in the cracks. Dominicans do not fear this geothermal power. They respect it. Elders still speak of spirits in the steam. The sulfur springs are not merely curiosities. They are healing waters, used for generations to ease aches, draw out fevers, and realign the body. In places like Wattenwaven, women still gather at dawn to bathe before the day begins, their laughter mingling with the scent of minerals and hibiscus. The island is stitched with rivers, 365 of them, they say, one for every day of the year. The truth is less important than the symbolism. Water is everywhere. It doesn't trickle. It charges. It dances over rocks, disappears underground, then resurfaces, clean and cold. Emerald Pool, fed by one such cascade, glows faintly green from the dappled light that breaks through the forest canopy above. Trails crisscross the island like old veins. Some are marked, many are not. The Waitukubuli National Trail, named for the island's Kalinago name, is the Caribbean's first long-distance hiking path. Stretching over 100 miles from the southern village of Scott's Head to the northern tip at Cabritz, it threads through rainforest, farmland, ridgelines, and remote hamlets, where the sound of a machete against bamboo is the only sign of another human presence. Along these paths, history lingers. You may pass a crumbling stone wall overgrown with moss, a remnant of a colonial estate, or stumble upon a maroon hideout, still marked by stones carefully placed generations ago. Nature and memory intertwine. Here, preservation isn't just ecological, it's historical. And this deep, living relationship with nature is not accidental. It's cultural. In Dominica, the land teaches. Children grow up knowing the difference between bush medicine and garden food. A fever might be treated with a tea made from zeb, a pick or fever grass. A cut is soothed with crushed aloe. Digging yams isn't just a chore. It's a rite of passage. Respect for the land is not preached, it is practiced. This respect carries into the island's approach to sustainability. While many Caribbean nations face the twin pressures of climate change and overdevelopment, Dominica has taken a different path. After the devastation of Hurricane Maria in 2017, the government declared its aim to become the world's first climate-resilient nation. But long before that policy, the culture was already one of resilience, of building with wood, harvesting rainwater, and knowing how to live without excess. To explore Dominica's interior is to understand that the wild is not separate from civilization. It is not out there. It is here, woven into daily life. The forest is not feared. It is relied upon. It feeds, heals, and guards the stories too old to be written. As you return from the highlands, tired but exhilarated, it becomes clear. This island doesn't just have nature. It is nature, breathing, growing, remembering. In the next chapter, we'll explore the voices of Dominica, its languages, oral traditions, and the quiet revolution of cultural preservation that takes place not in institutions, but in homes, street corners, and the melodies carried by wind. Chapter 5, The Languages That Sing the Island. If you listen closely in Dominica, truly listen, you'll hear more than voices. You'll hear a living archive. The island speaks in many tongues, but not all of them come from books. Some come from trees, from drums, from whispers passed down in kitchens and courtyards. And some, perhaps, are older than words. Dominica's official language is English, but it's not the only one spoken, nor is it always the most expressive. On buses, in markets, at family gatherings, you're more likely to hear Creole, the island's French-based Creole. It rolls off the tongue like laughter, quick, rhythmic, and intimate. It's a language of texture and tone, where gestures carry as much meaning as verbs. To speak Creole isn't just to communicate, it's to belong. It was once,